This is Fresh Air. In March 1978, William Least Heat Moon got in his van and set off on a 13,000-mile journey down the back roads of America. At the time, there wasn't much to keep him home. He had been laid off from the college where he taught English, and his marriage was dissolving. He wrote a book about his trip called Blue Highways, and in 1983 it became a surprise bestseller. Over the past 8 years, he's made a series of trips to one county in Kansas. Chase County is 744 square miles large, with a population of 3,000. It's part of the last remaining grand expanse of tall grass prairie in America. It's the subject of his new book, Prairie Earth. Before we talk, a short reading.
In 1965, when I came out of the Navy, I drove across the prairie again on a visit to California, and the grasslands looked different to me, so alive and varied. And then I believed that 2 years of watching the Atlantic Ocean changed the way I viewed landscape, especially levelish, rolling things. I also began to see the prairies as native ground, the land my hometown sat just out of sight of, and I began to like them not because they demand your attention like mountains and coasts, but because they almost defy absorbed attention. At first, to be here now, was hard for me to do on the prairie. I liked the clarity of line in a place that seemed to require me to bring something to it and to open to it actively. See far, see little. I learned a prairie secret. Take the numbing distance in small doses and gorge on the little details that beckon. Like its moisture, the prairie doesn't give anything up easily unless it's horizon and sky. Search out its variation, its colors, its subtleties. It's not that I had to learn to think flat. Prairies rarely are. But I had to begin thinking open and lean, seeing without set points of obvious focus, noticing first the horizon and then drawing my vision back toward middle distance where so little appears to exist. I came to understand that the prairies are nothing but grass as the sea is nothing but water, that most prairie life is within the place, under the stems, below the turf, beneath the stones. The prairie is not a topography that shows its all, but rather a vastly exposed place of concealment, like the geodes so abundant in the county, where the splendid lies within the plain cover. At last I realized I was not a man of the sea or coasts or mountains, but a fellow of the grasslands.
Now, what's it like where you live? You live in Kansas City, Missouri.
Well, I live in Columbia, which is a couple hours east. I live out in the county in central Missouri. It's woodlands. There are two ponds in front of the house. I'm surrounded by trees. So each time that I went into the prairie over the last 8 years that I've been working on Prairie Earth, it was a shock to leave the woodland and encounter such treelessness again. But it was a kind of shock, I think, that sharpened me, reminded me of the dominance and the importance of the sky. And certainly the people of the Flint Hills of central Kansas are far more activated by sky and by weather than they are, say, by religion or politics.
Is that because weather's so visible in an open area like that? And so potentially dangerous?
Yes, both things. They really have so little shelter from it. If a tornado comes on, they can run for the storm cellar, something they commonly call a cave or sometimes a fraidy hole. But commonly when they see a tornado approaching or hear one approaching, they will go outside to watch it and only at the last minute to dive for the cellar.
I mean, tornadoes are famous from Kansas because of the Wizard of Oz. Were you there for a tornado? Did you get to experience one?
No, I guess I'm both relieved and disappointed that I didn't see one in Kansas. I've seen one on the plains, but not in the Flint Hills.
But you went into some of the cellars where people take refuge from tornadoes.
Oh, yeah, I have a little, I don't know what to call it, a meditation in Prairie Earth about one of those cellars. I also met two people, Paul and Leo Evans, who one evening after I'd known them some time, quite offhandedly told me about being taken aloft in a tornado in the 40s. They were sitting in the house, hunkered down one night, being awakened by the approaching storm. They saw the iron stove move down the hallway through the living room and then out the wall that had just disappeared. They grabbed onto each other. Leola was wearing her new rabbit skin coat. And then the next thing they knew, they were taken aloft and set down, picked up again and carried another 60 yards and dropped down in a pile of dead and dying animals, including their favorite dog, which had a two-by-four through it. These are people who actually lived what Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz alleged to have done. They went aloft twice that night, came down, survived to tell the story.
Which name did you use when you were traveling through Chase County and meeting people there? Did you use William Trogdon or William Least Heat Moon?
I use Heat Moon only in writing, and when I'm on the book tour out there, I was Bill Trogdon. That's what they knew me as. Although after a few days in the county, word got out that I was the fellow who had written Blue Highways, so they knew both names.
How come you use the Least Heat Moon name for your writing, but not in the rest of your life?
It doesn't seem proper to me, perhaps even respectful to say put it on my tax forms. It's something far more personal, that which may seem strange given that it appears on a book where there are 165,000 copies of it out. That's Prairie Earth, Blue Highways even more than that. But the book, these books are words that I suppose come from the heart, so that it's not something quite as disassociated as a W-2 form.
Would you explain where each name comes from?
My father in the 30s wanted to recognize that part of our ancestry which comes from the Osage. He took the name Heat Moon. When my brother, my elder brother, came along, he wanted to take on an Indian name. And to do so, he had to undergo a little vision quest. When he came back and had successfully passed, in a sense, the vision quest, my father said, take the name that you wish. And he said, I want to be Heat Moon, too. Since Heat Moon's taken, you can therefore be Little Heat Moon. And I coming last, that makes me least.
Did you go on a vision quest yourself for the name?
Yes. 2 days and two nights out in the Ozark Hills alone with a knife and matches, 24 hours of silence, 24 hours without food, all things fairly carefully orchestrated about what we must do. Of course, the heart of a vision quest anywhere, I'm speaking now of Native American vision quest, for males or females, that typically occurred when the person would enter his or her teens. The purpose was to find, during that quest, a link between himself or herself and something greater than that. It was attempt, in other words, to touch, for want of a better word, Godhead, or something that a Native American might call the great mysterious.
How old were you when you did this?
I was 14. 14, yes.
If you're just joining us, my guest is William Least Heat Moon, who's the author of the bestseller Blue Highways and a new book called Prairie Earth. We're going to take a short break and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. William Least Heat Moon is my guest, author of the new book, Prairie Earth. How did you end up deciding that you'd use the William Least Heat Moon name on your books, even though you weren't using it in the rest of your life?
Well, we did use it in the rest of our lives, but it was only at home. But when I was writing Blue Highways, the first manuscripts I wrote under the name William Trogdon, those early manuscripts were not any good, because in part, part of the reason they were not any good is that I was drawing only upon the Anglo-Irish Western European traditions. They were books of words, I think, and not much more. What they seemed to lack was a kind of spiritual center. And once I realized that, then it dawned on me that the man writing Blue Highways was not just William Trogdon, it was also Least Heat Moon. When I began to combine those two things and revise the book, then the whole book began to change.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, you had sent copies of the earlier manuscript to publishers under the name of William Trogdon, and the publishers that you sent it to rejected it. But when you started rewriting it and wrote it under the name of Least Heat Moon, then you got an acceptance. There's one cynical way of looking at this,
that's not quite what happened.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It was rejected as many times under Trogdon as it was Heat Moon.
Oh, I see. It was rejected under both names.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yeah, in fact, I had three rejections. I sent it out finally three times at a mailing. I got tired of waiting for all these responses. And the last time I sent it out three times, I got one rejection, one almost rejection. The person did say maybe, but I don't think so. And one acceptance. So it was rejected well under the name of Least Heat Moon too.
Right. Okay. Now, what I was going to get to, and I guess I'm wrong about this, is that there is this kind of like romance of the Native American in parts of American culture, and I was wondering if publishers might have seemed like more open to it if they had like a good like feature angle. You know, he's Native American.
Well, perhaps. I mean, I guess it would depend on the editor. But keep in mind, there are many, many places in this country, many, many people who the last thing they want to hear from or about is somebody with any kind of Native American tie. This is a group of people who for 400 years have had a hell of a time making their way in Anglo society, and there's nothing more Anglo in this country than the publishing business.
Did you travel a lot when you were young?
Yes, my father, when I was 8 or 9, taught me how to read maps and would sit me in the front seat beside him, and I would be the navigator as we would roll across the country. His great love was to take a single highway and follow it all the way east or all the way west. And since we lived in Kansas City, right near the heart of the country, we could get to the borders and the coast on a single highway. But keep in mind, these highways were far different from what we know now. It was in the 40s and early 50s.
You know, both of your books seem to have started with maps, with
yes.
You looking at maps.
Right, right.
Is that something you do in your spare time?
Oh, I love maps. I love maps. I think in some ways, maybe I should have been a cartographer. Yeah. But I think maps, well, I'll quote Peter Steinert, who writes for Audubon Magazine. He said that maps are a way of organizing wonder. And I suppose much of what I try to do in my writing is to find some way of organizing wonder, the wonder of things I've seen, and present it to readers so that there can be a sharing there.
In your press picture, there's a picture of you leaning on a walking stick. And I wasn't sure whether that walking stick is just a nice thing to have when you're doing a lot of walking, as you did for Prairie Earth, or whether it's to, you know, help out with a limp.
I guess I have to quit having photographs taken with walking sticks because people now think that I'm crippled. I guess I'm crippled, but at least at this point, not in the legs. It's between the ears. I have a single hobby, as best I can tell. It's making walking sticks out of natural branches. And in Prairie Earth, in fact, there's an account of making two different walking sticks, one of cottonwood and one of Osage orange, sometimes called hedge. So it's when I go into the field, I usually have a walking stick or sometimes a staff, which is a longer piece. Walking stick traditionally about 3 feet long, a staff a couple feet longer. I'll travel with those.
What are the pleasures of walking with a walking stick?
Well, it makes you something like a movable tripod, in that you have a much better footing. But I think it's also, I had a great-great-grandfather who made walking sticks, and I think that when I'm walking, let's say in Chase County, the subject of Prairie Earth, walking with a stick that I cut from that very soil there, perhaps the cottonwood walking stick, I feel I'm walking with a kind of synecdoche of the place. That walking stick came from that soil, from that earth, and I have a piece of the growth from that soil in my hands. So that given that the rocks and soil in this particular region, the Flint Hills, are 250 million years old, I have, in a way, a 250 million year old result in my hand, which is that cottonwood limb.
Do you bring the walking stick into the city with you? Like, do you have it with you now in Washington?
No, well, you get on planes with that, and they think it's a weapon, so I leave it behind.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
It's been nice, Terry. Thanks.
William Least Heat Moon's new book is Prairie Earth. This is Fresh Air.